you will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host.
Hello once again and welcome to the next episode of the Tough Things First podcast, where we get to chat with Ray Zinn, the longest serving CEO in all of Silicon Valley. And today we get to talk about managing and leading millennials. I'm on the tail end of the baby boomer generation. I'm looking at the millennial generation, and I'm grappling with how I would lead and manage them on a day-to-day basis. And Ray has spanned 50 years in Silicon Valley, 37 years leading his own company. He has managed everyone from grandparents to young interns who are still wet behind the ears. So let's dive right in and talk about millennials, who now make up 30% of the population, and how you lead and manage them. Good morning, Ray. I trust everything is well with you today.
It is, Guy, and I hope you are having a wonderful new year.
Oh, man. Everything looks bright and optimistic from this side.
Well, that's great.
Let's talk about millennials. They're different than their parents are, that's for sure. And a leader is going to have to deal with the boomers, the Generation Z that's coming up. But the millennials seem to be intrinsically different than what we've had before. So from an employee standpoint, what's particularly different about people who were born in the 80s and the early 90s in terms of how you lead them, how you manage them, what their expectations are?
Well, as we're seeing, they're socially more active. In other words, they tend to have a different view of life and what it's all about. My granddaughter came over for Christmas and she's 17, and she was wearing these jeans that had these holes in them, you know, that, and I said to Kirsten, I mean, you know, can't your parents afford to buy you nicer clothes? And she says, Grandpa, this is a fashion. And I says, fashion with holes in them? And she says, yeah, she said, that's the fashion. So I said, well, why do you wear them with the holes in them? Why is that the fashion? She says, I don't know. It's just that that's what my friends are doing. And that's what they wear. And so they want to fit in. And so, you know, even when I was in high school, you know, we looked like the Fonz, as you would, Happy Days, you know, with our slick back hair and our t-shirts and rolled up sleeves and our Levi's pulled down to halfway down our bottom. And that was our style in that time. And so every generation has a style and the way they view life. Why the torn pants became a style for the millennials, I'm not sure. I mean, I can speculate. It's because they wanted to look shabbier, or they wanted to fit in. I mean, they were, because, you know, maybe not everybody, they wanted to look like they were homeless or something. I don't know. But anyway, every generation has their view and their style of how they want to be. So I think that's the difference is that everybody wants to fit in. And so in my day and age, you know, you wore a very snappy suit and tie and maybe even a vest. And now, of course, you know, people come to work even in shorts and flip flops and sports shirts. So they just want to fit into their particular group. So when I come in with my fancy suit and fancy shoes and tie and vest, that represents, you know, that's a foreign look to the millennials. And frankly, they take offense to that. So, if you're an older individual and you're managing millennials and you don't fit in, you're probably not going to be accepted and they're not going to respect you.
You know, and that's an interesting aspect, being a senior leader in an industry which is normally populated by younger people, is that occasionally the old dogs need to do a little adaptation too. When I first started consulting, the first big gig that I got, I went down to interview on day one. They told me I would have to come back the next day and interview. But on day one, I went down in my suit, my tie, my polished boots, and it was a great interview. They walked me to the door and they said, well, when you come back for the second part of your interview tomorrow, if you're wearing that suit and tie, we will not let you in the door. So I had to adjust pretty quickly on that score.
I was talking to some of my investment bankers that I dealt with at my Krell. And when you look out my office window, I can see the parking lot because I'm a second floor up and I could look out. And I see these investment bankers, they would come in or they would get out of their car. They would be had their dress shirt on, but it would be unbuttoned. And then I could see them fishing through their car, trying to find a tie and then putting their coat on and then coming up to see me. And I'd joke with him. I'd say, you know, I can see you down there getting dressed. Why don't you dress at home? He says, well, because we just came from another company and they take offense to me dressed like that. So I have to have suits of clothes that match whatever the expectation is when I go see my clients. And so, there is an expectation. Whether you're coming to see an older person, if you're a millennial, for example, and you have to go see a baby boomer type who's used to being dressed up in a suit and tie, that you may have to go dress in a suit and tie, and vice versa. If you're a baby boomer and you're going to go see a millennial in an important role, you may have to dress down a little bit.
Well, you know, those people who are on the road, the salespeople, they have to be flexible and they have to be inventive. And some other episode of the Tough Things First podcast, we'll let everyone know about how you got in the door at Texas Instruments.
Yeah.
One of the funnier stories I've heard. But let's get back to millennials for a second, because they're different in terms of their outlook about society and business. They like to refer to themselves as woke. They're much more socially aware, or at least socially politically active, than previous generations. So what challenges does this phase present to the leadership with inside of a company who has to make a buck but also has to pay attention to the millennials who almost see the corporate vehicle as a way of enforcing their social views in the world?
Yep. And that's the challenge. So if the company is predominantly the older generation, the more sliding toward the Generation X, as you would, then you have to be careful, because they may not be as socially attuned or up to it as the millennials, and vice versa. If your company is predominantly millennials, you're going to find that they're going to be more interested in how your company views the very social aspects of what's happening, whether it be immigration, whether it be marijuana, whether it be, social activism, Me Too movement, or whatever. Us, this older generation, as you would, we're not as socially involved in life, because we're not on Twitter, we're not on Facebook, we're not on Instagram and Messenger. We still just pick up the phone, or we'll write a letter or whatever. We don't necessarily just want to instantly communicate with everybody. And so there are differences that we have to recognize. I watch my grandchildren and they literally live on their devices. I mean, they have it in their hand. They might have it in their pocket, but I mean, they're grabbing and looking at it, I think, at two or three times a minute. You know, me, you know, man, I'm older, I'm baby boomer age. You know, if I look at my cell phone or my device, if I look at that, you know, more than, you know, once or twice every hour, I'm doing it too often. So, and I don't carry my devices around with me like these younger people do. I don't get my news that way. They get their news, whatever's on social media. That's how they learn about what's happening in the world. And so, you know, as much as we'd like to differ from that, you know, and call them on it, it's not going to work. They're growing up and being raised in an entire different environment than what the older generation has been exposed to.
Yeah, the previous generation was called Generation X. I like to refer to the next generation as Generation Distracted. Their attention span is focused on their phone, not necessarily on the people in the world around them, which kind of dovetails nicely to the next question, which I had, which was, are millennials making good leaders and good managers with inside of companies? Are they being effective in terms of building teams and getting their employees motivated to accomplish corporate missions?
I think that depends upon, you know, where their social work era is, whether they're in a high tech area like Silicon Valley or whether they're in a more of a rural area and maybe like Ohio, Iowa, or somewhere there is not as techy as they are here in the Bay Area. And so I think it just depends upon what kind of work they're doing, whether in the chemical industry, which is not a semiconductor or a software type business, or whether they're medical, or depending upon what their social environment is where they live. So their neighbors are going to have a different view. I know that I have a ranch in Montana, and come July and August, all they can talk about is getting out bow hunting. But in California, of course, they don't even talk about hunting because hunting is not encouraged here in Silicon Valley. So they all have a different view. They grow beards in Montana and not so much here. I mean, you might look scruffy here as you would, or have the shadow, 5 o'clock shadow, but those guys in Montana grow a full beard. And so their whole view of work, they'll wear Levi's with boots as opposed to California, you know, more either short pants or dress slacks and t-shirts. So it's a whole different environment depending upon where you live.
You know, it's funny you bring up the bow hunting. I had some friends who came from some of the small steel towns up in Ohio. And one of the funny things about that local culture was that the union would call a strike every year, and they would always do it on the first week of hunting season.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and management never put up a fight because the union guys and the suits were both out in the field hunting deer. So they got along at least on that point. You know, what does a CEO have to do to make the millennials effective future leaders? Let's hypothesize for a second that you've got a garden variety millennial who you think is kind of smart. You want to make him a manager, but you know, he's part of the distracted generation. He's, you know, focused on social issues and maybe bringing them into the office a lot. What do you do to make sure that a millennial is executing to the business mission and leading his teams effectively?
That's a good point, Guy. So you have to look for the millennials that can span, S-P-A-N, span the gap. If you've got the ones that are overly social active, and are, you know, their head is in a different location, they're probably not going to make as good a manager. So the kind of managers that you're going to want to find among the millennials are those that can span the gap, that understand the cultural differences, understand the social issues, that can be more flexible, as they say. You know, they said, blessed are the flexible, for they shall not get bent out of shape. So you want if you're grooming a millennial, make sure they're flexible, because that'll help them as they now have to lead not only those that are their same age group, but also those that are older than them, who are maybe even be grandparent age.
And that's going to be a tricky thing for the millennials, is tapping into the older workers and making sure that they feel valued and needed and productive to the company as well, being part of a team where a lot of people, you know, could be their grandchildren. So I'm kind of curious, maybe we just have a maturation thing here. The baby boomers, you know, they were the generation of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and they turned into the generation of 401ks and watching Dancing with the Stars on TVs. Do we have a little bit of a waiting game with the millennials? Are they naturally going to morph into being more like their parents and because of that become better managers with inside of a company?
Well, I think age helps anyway. So just time passing and because they'll be managing whatever Generation Z is, whatever is after Generation Z, they're going to be having to deal with those. So, you know, life moves on, and the generations span further distances now than they ever have, because we have older people working longer than in the past. You know, in the past, you know, they might have retired in their 50s. Now they're retiring in their 60s and 70s. So you're having you have an older workforce, there is going to be that span of time and age that you're going to have to cope with. Now, some companies will limit that span because they don't want to have to deal with the age differences. And they'll know that, but they're concerned about the medical costs associated with the older generation. So they just limit their workforce. I think that's a mistake, but that's what they do, is they tend to cluster their ages. And so they will tend to, follow more of a cluster age group as opposed to a larger span of ages.
Well, and I think that's going to be important going forward, because you're right, following Generation Z, there's going to be yet another different type of generation coming into the workforce. And that flexibility, being able to incorporate the old, the young, the new, sedimentary type of workers is the only way that you're going to be able to manufacture effective teams.
I call it the robotic generation. So the one that comes in after the millennials or Z, then we're going to have the robotic generation, which is going to be in 15, 20 years from now. They're going to be, most things are going to be robotic controlled, you know, whether it be working in Burger King or whether it's going to be in making semiconductors. Everything's going to be done robotically, even medically. Who knows, maybe even the justice system will become more robotic and will fit into a more robotic environment for even having a trial. So you're going to find, I think, more and more roboticism, as they say, and maybe that's the way education is going to be too. You won't see the kids going actually into classrooms. You're going to see them operating from home or from wherever they live, and be learning through internet type Skype or whatever it'll be in that time frame. But you know, everything's changing. I mean, the way we live is going to change. We don't know how our rural areas are going to look now with expanding from urban to rural, and maybe rural change now and be more influenced by the urban as the population grows and as industries move into some of these more rural areas like Montana and Wyoming and Idaho, as compared to just California or New York or Boston and that sort of thing.
Well, for the audience, remember, you heard it here first. The next generation is the one that follows Generation Z, is going to be Generation R, Generation Robotic. And I think you're right, Ray, because Generation Z never knew a time in their lives when there wasn't the internet. And the next generation is never going to have known a time in their lives when there wasn't robotics. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to profoundly changed the way they perceive companies, the way they perceive work, the way they perceive interaction between human beings or non-interaction between human beings. I think it's going to be a very, very, very different world for them.
Well, you know, we have these self-driving cars. You know, there's going to come a time when there won't even be driver's licenses, where people will not even, you know, people say, you had a driver's license? What's that? You know, because everything's going to be so automated that they go from point A to point B in a different way than you and I go from point A to point B. I mean, while I was not raised in the horse and buggy era, my grandparents were. And listening to them talk about that, I can go from 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds in my Tesla, it would just blow their minds. I mean, they wouldn't even understand or comprehend what that's all about. But that's happened in my lifetime. Is my grandparents were horse and buggy, and now my kids and my great grandkids will not even know what a driver's license is. I mean, they'll. Everything will be so automated that things will change entirely. So, you know, I remember when I was in college, you know, computation was done if you're an engineer, it was with a slide rule. You've asked my grandkids, do they know what a slide rule is? And they say, what? What's a slide rule? And if you try to describe it to them, they couldn't even understand it. So it's interesting how times have changed that they wouldn't even understand or comprehend what it's like to, you know, to crank a car to start it or to use a slide rule to compute a mathematical problem. So, you know, even in my lifetime, it's tremendous changes has taken place. In my 20s, I was using, a Merchant mechanical calculator. You know, it wasn't just a few years next. A time I had a electronic calculator that, you know, the first versions of it in the early 70s, four function calculator. And I thought that was fantastic. I couldn't believe what a change that is. Now, you know, you can calculator, you get them free. I mean, it's one of the apps on your phone. I mean, things have changed dramatically, even in my short lifespan.
And I hate to admit it, I'm just old enough to own a slide rule. Of course, I had one of those fancy circular slide rules, which back then mm-hmm. was kind of a cool thing. But you're right. And here's the interesting thing. And this is something for the millennials who are listening, who are going to be the next generation of CEOs and managers, is that the next generation is going to perceive the way that they work and the way that your company works based on how they grew up. And we know that technology and science increases on a exponential basis. The amount of knowledge we have in the world doubles. I think it's something like every 10 or 12 years. Mm-hmm. So that means when the millennials who are just now maybe being anointed as a team leader, when they get up to the senior management level, the next generation that's going to come in is going to be so vastly more informed, educated, wired, able to find information and have an entirely different worldview based on that, that it's probably good to be thinking about that now because it's going to change the way you lead in the future.
Absolutely. So remember, you heard it here, and probably 20 years from now, you won't even have a driver's license.
Yep. Operation Robot. Thanks again, Ray. I appreciate it. For the listening audience, the two things I want you to do right away, rate and review this podcast, share it with your friends. If you're an entrepreneur or if you're in Silicon Valley, this needs to be your weekly dose of leadership management and entrepreneurial education. But to get the full double barrel effect of this, go to Amazon, get a copy of Ray's first book, Tough Things First. It is the management and leadership manifesto of the generation. There is not a single tome out there that covers all the bases like Ray did in that book. And once you have recovered from reading that, because it is like drinking from the fire hose, then get his second book, Zen of Zen, which kind of puts a nice ribbon around it because it gives you those insights into people, society, and the interaction of all these different components to make you an effective leader inside of an effective company. So thanks again, Ray. It's a pleasure as always, and look forward to the next episode of the Tough Things First podcast.
Well, thanks, Guy. We look forward to it.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.